I'm Scott Martin with The Wall Street Reporter. Today we're talking to Krista Huff. She's the lead analyst at Cabot Undervalued Stocks Advisor. Her track record speaks for itself. She's beaten the S&P 500 since early 2012, which is a spectacular run. And for her, it's all about growth at the right price. Krista, thanks for being with us today. How are you?
Thank you, Scott. It's nice to be here today. My name's Krista Huff. I am a stock market expert. I've been studying and investing in stocks for over 30 years. I had a dozen years at Morgan Stanley as a retail vice president financial advisor. And during the last decade, I have been writing about stocks, especially for Cabot Wealth Network. So I write a newsletter called Cabot Undervalued Stocks Advisor, where I look for growth stocks that have essentially low price earnings ratios and low debt levels so that they have less risk than growth stocks that might have, you know, PEs that are 100 or they're not making any profit like Tesla. So I'm looking for the lower risk growth stocks.
That sounds amazing. So it's really the best of both worlds. They've got the growth profile, but at the same time, you're not just buying, you're not buying paper in a dream. It's a real company.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think we're going to talk about a few of the names you're looking at there, because I cannot think of any right now, to be honest. it's all either paper or it's trash. You know, either they're not buying it or they're buying it to the moon. But what do you have your eye on today? And Morgan Stanley, that's a headline item today.
Right. Morgan Stanley's buying E-Trade. And, you know, people can get the basics of the transaction from any normal news source, but I'm going to give you the inside scoop on why this transaction is really key for, you know, do-it-yourself investors, people who don't go to a financial advisor, but instead they go on their computer to, let's say, Charles Schwab, E-Trade, et cetera. If Morgan Stanley gives the E-Trade customers access to Morgan Stanley research, and I don't know if they will, but they probably will, that is incredibly valuable research that literally no do-it-yourself investor has access to. I use research like Morgan Stanley research, like Deutsche Bank and Goldman and such, and I would never use the free research that's available on the do-it-yourself websites because they pale so greatly in comparison to the research that's available from the big boys. And, you know, the insight that I get, I mean, you might type in, you know, oil refining stocks on a website like Morgan Stanley, and you might get a 100-page research report that, as you can imagine, tells you so much more than three paragraphs from Standard & Poor's that you can get for free at Charles Schwab. So if you're an E-Trade customer or actually a customer of any of the other competing firms, you might want to get an E-Trade account if you find out that they're going to give you free access to the Morgan Stanley research.
Wow. Well, there's a lot going on there. And I think just to attack a few of the pieces, so Morgan is getting, obviously, that front end of the E-Trade consumer base. They probably were not going to migrate to a full-service model anyway. You know, they're happy being self-directed, and there's a lot of assets in play there. And so then to provide that customer base with the institutional power, that seems I hate to use the word fintech, but that seems like a natural convergence of the institutional financial capabilities and the expertise with an online delivery platform, which E-Trade pioneered, and it's the best of both worlds, theoretically.
Right. I mean, this is win-win for the clients at E-Trade. I don't see any downside for them at all, and I think it's a great merger for an investor who wants to own Morgan Stanley stock or E-Trade stock. So basically, it's a very attractive merger.
That's fantastic. I think it keeps Morgan Stanley relevant even with the millennials, and it gives E-Trade a way to avoid commoditization. So that's a win-win, and I think a lose maybe for regional brokers. LPL, do you think they're a little nervous right now?
I don't have a perspective on that. I'll tell you who should be nervous. When Schwab decided to merge with Ameritrade, the one thing that they don't have and can't offer is the fantastic Wall Street research that the E-Trade people are now going to have access to. And so if word gets out amongst the do-it-yourself investing crowd that they can switch from Schwab or Ameritrade over to E-Trade and now get this big thing that they can't get at their original firms, you know, Morgan Stanley might steal a lot of market share in that market.
That's a great point. You push two discount brokers together and you get a big discount broker, but
right.
at a wirehouse and you get some real institutional knowledge. And I think I see a space there for people like you in the middle, because, you know, if I'm a self-directed investor, which all of our people are, you know, it's I can't really make sense of that on my own. It's too much power under the hood.
You know, it's hard to be a do-it-yourself investor, a do-it-yourself home remodeler, a do-it-yourself interior decorator. And you've seen in the last couple decades, our country has moved in this direction of everybody is really encouraged to do everything themselves. But you frankly cannot do everything yourself. You would have to spend a tremendous amount of time on each individual pursuit in order to gain the expertise to actually remodel your own home, to actually manage your own stocks to a good level of expertise. I mean, granted, the people I write to are people who are managing their own stocks, but there's so much that they don't know. There's so much to learn, and they've been intimidated by the media that if they went to an expert to get help, that they're somehow failing, you know, and I don't, I'm not on board with that. I hire people to do wonderful things for me. I can't be an expert at everything. And I just want people to feel free enough to admit, okay, these four areas of life I'm great at, these other 20 I'm not, and I will never be. And let's hire an expert.
That's fantastic. We can learn together. I bet you educate your people all the time if they want to learn.
Oh, yeah.
But on the other hand, this is hard work. You know, I could probably pull some screens, figure out, these stocks are undervalued. They've got a low PE, and I'm going to burn myself every time. You've seen the market. Yeah, 30 years, you know. You've seen where the screens break down and where human expertise really comes in.
Yeah, and I want to give you, you know, some excellent stock suggestions because I do spend all my time screening, you know, well over 1,000 stocks for growth and value and stuff, and I can give you half a dozen names of excellent stocks that I've already screened that any investor can now do their own personal research on, but I've already gotten rid of the ones that aren't growing their profits. They have scandals with the CEOs, et cetera. And the reason that I'm about to give you names of other financial firms is because earlier this week, Franklin Resources announced that they were buying Legg Mason, which is, an investment firm. And Franklin Resources actually concentrates their business more on employee benefits retirement accounts, you know, so you've got like institutional plus retail.
Yeah.
And in my screening, I've noticed for the past 6 months or so that I have more financial stocks in my undervalued growth area than any other sector or industry in the market. And so if you've got a preponderance of undervalued investment firms and insurance firms, there's going to be more takeovers in those areas. And so I'm going to give you names of seven of them right now that anyone can go look up and make money on. Several of them are breaking out of trading ranges today. So you've got Ameriprise Financial, Assurant, Athene, Bright House, Equitable, Lincoln National, and Voya Financial. All of these are small and mid-cap growth stocks, undervalued. And if there are additional takeovers in the industry, which I'm thinking there probably will be, because it makes sense financially now that all these firms are charging such low fees, they have, they have lower profit than they did like 10 and 20 years ago. So they have to find ways to become more profitable. And the Morgan Stanley merger today with E-Trade is an example of how they're going to find ways to make more money in the future. So any of these companies I just mentioned could be takeover targets, or they could thrive on their own because they're already making lots of money.
Wow, I think that's a I don't want to call it a complex story, but it's definitely it's a sophisticated thesis, because it's got a lot of factors in play, a lot of moving parts, and they add up to what sounds like high conviction there, that this is a consolidating space, and you know, you drill down the factors, it makes a lot of sense. You're right, fee compression is a huge thing. You know, the robots are coming. Fees are going down across the board. ETF fees, you know, practically zero. And where do these companies make money? Scale. So
yeah. I'm doing trades right now with Interactive Brokers for $1 for the trade. That's absurd. I would pay so much more than that. I really would. But, you know, they want to charge me $1, I'll pay $1.
That's interesting. You would pay more. You see the value there, and you would happily write a check for much more.
I would.
That's so maybe there's room for full service in a sort of luxury model down the road. I think in the meantime, you're right, we have to get through it first. Those companies you mentioned, any in particular that really stand out as either needing to get acquired, or, you know, how do the partners work out, I guess is the question.
Well, I will tell you one thing. I was watching Voya Financial because it looked like it was about to break out of a trading range, and it broke out today. So I bought both the stock and the options today, because when a stock breaks out of a trading range, it usually goes straight up, you know, 10 to 20% immediately upon the breakout. And I like to wait until, you know, some kind of important technical action is happening like that before I buy something, and that way I make money sooner rather than later. And I already put an alert into my computer to notify me when Voya goes up, you know, another 8% or so, at which point I'll start using a stop loss on part of it. So I, you know, I'm sort of a portfolio manager, and I enjoy that stuff. But if someone wants immediate price action, Voya would be a good one to look at. The symbol is VOYA. Otherwise, Brighthouse Financial had a great earnings report last week, and the stock shot up, and it's still climbing, so it's a little late on that. That would be one you might look at, and if a market correction comes along, then jump in and buy it on sale.
All right, that makes sense. So it's really I like your timing perspective there, because you're right. You know, why put it on the screen and then wait 6 months for anything to happen? You know, you can't really do that in this market. Got to grab now.
Right. You know, another area where I definitely approach stocks, like waiting for it to be on sale, all those movie star stocks like Apple and Netflix and Google and Amazon. I call them movie star stocks, and you probably know what I mean. They're glamorous. People love to read the, you know, the stories when they're in the headlines, and the PEs are usually through the roof. And so I don't buy them at those points, but all of them eventually have a big pullback. And so last fall, during the pullback, I bought Amazon, Netflix, and Google, and they're all up really well right now. And Netflix is the one that I'm still buying. It's rising back towards its previous high, which was about $420. And Netflix is my coronavirus stock. And I realize this is probably it's probably not a good idea to sound like happy and optimistic about the coronavirus, which I am not. And I'm extremely concerned about the virus. And you know, what really concerns me is, like, how are all these people in China getting food when they can't even leave their house? And there's no food in the supermarkets. That is scary to me, and I would pray about that. But from a stock market point of view, most companies are going to be harmed from the coronavirus, because they can't, if they are manufacturers, they can't manufacture in China right now because no one's going to work, right? If they get their parts from China and bring the parts to the U.S. and manufacture here, well, A, no one's making the parts. B, the ports are all clogged up because, A, people aren't going to work, whatever. Like, you can't get your business going in and out of China right now, but Netflix can, because Netflix is on the internet and they're not harmed. Not only are they not harmed by the coronavirus, but with tens of millions of people stuck in their homes, the only thing they can buy right now is a movie subscription, right? So
that's right, and they have cabin fever, so that makes
right,
a lot of sense.
Right, they have cabin fever. So I think Netflix is actually going to make money off of the coronavirus, and they were already, by the way, growing rapidly internationally, which is why they're on my buy list in the first place. But this just reiterates, like, if you want to find a company that's attractive, that's not harmed by the virus, Netflix is the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
That is a fantastic argument. And there's so much going on. Netflix doesn't have to deliver only movies. They could deliver any kind of information. They've got that pipeline and the system.
Right.
And if it's virtual, they can do it. And it is a movie star stock. I've watched that thing. some harrowing dips, and by the dip, you've done okay so far. On those companies you bought last fall, do you want to make our people jealous and talk about price points? If they subscribe to your service, they could have gotten in here. Where did you get Amazon?
I'd have to look that up, but Netflix
okay,
I have
no
in front of me. I bought Netflix at $334 in late January, so it's been less than a full month, and it's at $381 now, but I believe it's going to $420 because it just – $380 was like a price resistance level, and it shot right past there. So, yeah, it might rest a little bit at $380, but I think it's sort of primed to go to $420 pretty quickly. And the other prices I don't have in front of me, but I'm going to look at Amazon here. Amazon, I got the chart, probably bought, I bought Amazon at $1,801 in December, or that's the price when I recommended it to my people at Cabot today.
Wow.
At $2,139. Yeah.
Wow. I remember that people thought Amazon was dead money. The earnings weren't going to make it. He wasn't going to make his growth targets, and it just wasn't happening. But earnings were great.
You know, one thing I would want to emphasize, and it really, you know, angers me, and a lot of times I write sarcastic, negative things about the media in my newsletter because I can get away with it. And because, you know, no matter what the news is, especially if it's an earnings report, most media outlets will find something negative to say, and then they will put the negative thing in the headline, and the investor who reads it will think, oh no, the company's doing poorly. I should avoid that stock. Like Apple was classic in the last couple of years. All the media did was pound on the idea that Apple is going to sell less iPhones, therefore they're going out of business. And I kept writing to my people, they're wrong. This is ridiculous. The future of Apple is not the number of iPhones they sell. It's the number of subscription services they sell on the people who already have iPhones. And anyone who actually read, like, the research and the earnings reports, they knew that this was a service company, not an iPhone company. iPhone is just like the venue or whatever. But people who get their financial information from, let's say,
the usual
New York Times or MSN, you know, they're going to get the impression that Apple's suffering. And so during that time period, I recommended it to people, and then it went, you know, way up, as it always does. There were a couple of times last year when I bought call options on Apple a half hour before the market closed, right before they reported earnings. And there was one time I made over 100% on those options in like five business days. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so I think that answers the question. Do you still like Apple, and do you think the services pivot is working? I guess so.
Yeah, Apple's awesome, and the next time we have a market correction, I'll be buying it and recommending it. I tend to wait for the big pullbacks on those movie star stocks, but then always buy them during the pullbacks. And, you know, if an investor really, if they're nervous, if they're seeing negative headlines and they're wondering, go to the earnings estimates, which you can find on many, many different websites. And look, are they projected to have stronger earnings growth this year versus last year? And what does the 2021 earnings estimate look like? And all you want to see is an uptrend, really. I mean, sure, there's more to it than that, but if you see rising earnings projections, chances are pretty good the stock is also going to rise.
So that's all it takes. It's that fundamental momentum. It's not consensus. It's not whisper numbers. It's just, is this company moving faster?
Is the company growing or profits growing? That is my bottom line in the sand. Go-to figure. I always start with earnings estimates. And if the earnings estimates are not showing growth, then I don't take a second glance at the company. I don't care if Jesus is the CEO. I am not going to invest in a company that doesn't have earnings growth.
That's a fantastic. I love that a lot because if Jesus could be the CEO, and you know, in theory, he would get the growth. The devil.
Yeah, he could turn it around, and then after he turns it around, then I'll buy it. Yeah.
It's a turnaround case until then. Where do you think Apple could go? Do you think 400? One of these days?
Let me take a look here at Apple. I will say that the earnings growth projections have really jumped in the last few months because just back around, well, in the fourth quarter, there was a time when Apple's 2020 earnings were only supposed to grow around 6% or so, but already that earnings projection is up in the mid-teens. So everyone keeps revising their earnings estimates upwards. I'm looking now at the price chart. The stock's been trading between roughly 310 and 330 for most of this year. That's a good sign when it like stabilizes and gets into like a tight trading range. And from there, it can rise, you know, if the news is good, if the profits are growing. So once it breaks out past 330, well, it would go at least to 350 before it, you know, paused.
Yeah.
And it could certainly go higher than that.
Okay. So, and that, I guess, 350 is not too far away from here, relatively.
Right.
But you would wait. You'd probably wait for that first post-coronavirus earnings report. And then
I would really, I would wait for a market correction. You know, the market's up, the S&P's up 12% or so since it broke out of a trading range in late October. 12% is a big move on a market average without a pullback. So I would wait for a big pullback, you know, and when that happens, Apple will go from like 319 where it is right now, maybe down to 280 or 270. That's where I would put it in my tickler file and say, this is where I want to buy Apple. And then when it goes to 280 or 270, don't second guess yourself. Just buy it. It would be such a bargain.
I like that a lot. And I think that speaks to the relative value side, which we might talk about next time if we can have you back sometime.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Fantastic. Anything else you want to tell me today?
You know, it's looking like a Japanese company might purchase the Speedway gas stores from Marathon Petroleum. Marathon has over 11,000 of those stores, and right now that portion of the company is in play and for about $22 billion. So the Marathon stock is very undervalued. The price-earnings ratio is below 10. The earnings growth rate is above 30%. They have moderate amounts of debt. There's a lot going on at Marathon, so people should read up on that and consider, you know, do I want to own an oil refining stock? I think that's the one to own. Valero is also very attractive as well. So is PBF Energy.
Interesting. Well, I think on the refining side, if they're giving up the consumer-facing piece, would they maybe acquire a rival or, you know, just pay a big dividend? What would they do with the cash?
Oh, that's, you know, that's an interesting question. I would think they probably would use some of that money for acquisitions. Another thing that the whole refining industry has going for it right now is that there are brand new regulations that just came in play in January globally. International Maritime Organization has changed the way ships and tankers the type of gasoline or fuel that they buy. So they have to buy low sulfur diesel fuel now, whereas that was not a mandate before. And companies like PBF Energy and Marathon are providing the low sulfur diesel fuel, and they're making high margins on it, which is why these companies are projected to have huge earnings growth this year.
So if I were buying any energy stock, this would be the place I'd look.
Yeah, I would stick with oil refiners and really not go in any other parts of the energy sector right now.
That's the sweet spot, and that might be the only sweet spot. Well, I've taken a little bit of your time today, but I know our people are going to love it. Thank you very much, and I hope we can talk again.
I look forward to it. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks again.